Hello, this is Helen Cannon with Petals and Prose. And if you listen to the program when I last spoke, I had been talking about Shakespeare and his use of flowers. I'd like to continue with that. I could spend many hours, in fact, because Shakespeare did so much with the use of flowers. This is a continuation from an essay by Beatrice Beck, who I knew at Carmel. Shakespeare loved roses and lilies and their stately companionship in the manor gardens, and he knew with perhaps even more familiar affection the simpler gardens of towns and villages where flowers, herbs, and fruits grew together in aromatic congeniality. His knowledge of horticulture, of orchard and vineyard tending, and of care of bees has an undeniably first-hand flavor. Not one of his contemporaries, save the herbalists themselves, spoke with such frequency and acquaintance of herbs and their preparations. Herbs at that period were of greater importance than they are today. No good housewife would neglect her winter store, for herbs provided a most valuable resource in illness as well as for general use at the table. Shakespeare alludes to numerous times to herbs. Perdotus says in A Winter's Tale, "Here's flowers for you, hot lavender, mints, savory, marjoram." And in Sonnet 99, Shakespeare writes, "The forward violet thus did I chide, sweet thief, whence did thou steal thy sweet smells, if not from my love's breath? The purple pride which on thy soft cheek complexion dwells, in my love's veins thou hast too grossly dyed. The lily I condemned for thy hand, and buds of marjoram had stolen thy hair." Rosemary had high favor in Shakespeare's day, both in the kitchen gardens and pleasure gardens. Trained over arbors and allowed to run freely over mounds and banks, Sir Thomas More said, "I let it run all over my garden walls, not only because my bees loved it, but because it is an herb sacred to remembrance and therefore to friendship, whence a spray of it hath a dumb language that maketh it the chosen emblem at our funeral wakes, in our burial grounds." Ophelia in Hamlet handed a sprig of rosemary to her brother with these words, "There's rosemary. That's for remembrance. Pray you, love, remember." Rosemary was used at weddings, and a sprig of it was always placed in the wine to toast the happiness to the bride. The friar in Romeo and Juliet explains, "Dry up your tears and stick your rosemary on this fair course, and, as the custom is, in all her best array, bear her to church. For though fond nature bids us all lament, yet nature's tears are reason's merriment." The rose is sometimes called the queen of flowers and is the flower most frequently mentioned by Shakespeare, directly or indirectly, over 100 times. One well-known scene from Henry IV ends with Warwick saying, "And here I prophesy, this brawl today, grown to this faction, in the temple garden shall send between red rose and the white 1,000 souls to death and deadly night." It is more pleasant to remember the following from Romeo and Juliet. "What's in a name? That we call rose by any other name would smell as sweet." The lily is the next most mentioned flower. It is the well-known emblem of purity and modesty, and Shakespeare refers to them over 20 different times. This number would be larger if one were to count his metaphors. In King John, "To gild refined gold, to paint the lily, to throw perfume on the violet is wasteful and ridiculous excess." And in Love's Labour's Lost, "Now by my maiden's honor, yet as pure as the unsullied lily." Gerard, in his herbal, described 24 different daffodil species which were carefully nourished up in Elizabethan gardens. Shakespeare knew all of these varieties and used such descriptive terms as jonquil, saffron, lily, narcissus, and daffodil. Again, we turn to A Winter's Tale. "Daffodils that come before the swallow dares and take the winds of March with beauty." Daisies are often mentioned by Shakespeare, and they were among the flowers in the fantastic garden that poor Ophelia wove before her death. There's a daisy. I would give you some violets, but they withered all when my father died. Pansies, that's for thought, exclaims Ophelia, and it is the pansy, the little western flower upon which the bolt of Cupid fell and made purple with life's wound, and which maidens call love in idleness, the flower that Oberon thus described to Puck when he was sent to gather it. The pansy was beloved by the Elizabethans. Numerous popular names were given to this little violet of three colors: blue, white, or yellow, Johnny Jump Up, Herb Trinity, Three Faces Under a Hood, Meet Me at the Garden Gate. There were also pet names of Call Me to You, Cuddle Me to You, Kiss Me Ere I Rise, Pink of My John, Cupid's Flower, Love in Idleness, and Heart's Ease. There's no wine-dark pansies in Shakespeare's time to charm the lover of flowers. None of the splendid deep purples, burnt orange, lemon, sherry, or canary hues. They were not developed until about 1875 and in France, of all places. Then there was the pomegranate. Shakespeare would place this fruit tree in flower under Juliet's window. The original home for this tree was probably in Persia or Babylon, and then taken to Spain from Africa. Some say it came to England during the Anglo-Saxon period, brought and cultivated by the monks. The pomegranate was first used by Catherine of Aragon as her heraldic device. It was first mentioned in print in England in 1558, herbal by Turner. Shakespeare tells of the pomegranate in All's Well That Ends Well. Go, sir, you were beaten in Italy for picking a kernel out of a pomegranate. You are a vagabond and no true traveler. It should also be noted that Shakespeare remembered the gardener in his writings. He shows by small detail in his plays that he understood the work of the gardener. One is struck by the correctness of the terms he applied. Many of the gentlemen of this period who cultivated large gardens and employed gardeners often took great pleasure and pride in grafting their own favorite apples. In the play Henry IV, Justice Shallow speaks of Pippin of his own grafting. There are two scenes from Richard II that are especially descriptive of the gardener. In one scene, the queen to King Richard says, "Gardener, for telling me these news of woe, pray God the plants thou graftest may never grow." And the gardener replies, "Poor queen, so that thy state might be no worse, I would my skill were subject to thy curse." Here did she fall a tear, and here in this place I'll set a bank of rue, sour herb of grace, rue, even for Ruth, here shortly shall be seen in remembrance of a weeping queen. So there's a lot more that could be taken from Shakespeare and his use of flowers, but it's obvious, I think, even from these short readings, that he knew and loved the flowers in his England. So turn to Shakespeare from time to time and peruse his use of flowers. This is Helen Cannon with Petals and Prose. Thank you for listening.